Welcome to the weekly Dharma Talk podcast from the Columbus Karma Teksum Choling Buddhist Meditation Center. This week's Dharma Talk is entitled Faith and Doubt by Jim Dunn. When we meet a new spiritual practice, such as Buddhist practice, we may wonder about the practices, where they come from, and whether they are useful or not. The Buddha himself said not to rely on legends or reports, but to judge the value of something oneself. In this talk, Jim explains how we can find the proof of meditation's effectiveness in our own lives. If you like our Dharma Talk series, please consider donating to Columbus Karma Teksum Choling at columbusktc.org. Enjoy the podcast.
So I would like to welcome everybody that's coming in this morning. And today I'm going to talk about faith and doubt in the Dharma, how to develop faith, and what it's about. But first of all, we usually begin these with reciting the refuge prayer. And I am going to do it in English. My Tibetan is not very good, so. But I will recite it, and you can join me as you, in your minds or out loud, since we're not going to have vocals here. So, in the Buddha, the Dharma, and the assembly most excellent, I take refuge until I reach enlightenment. By the merit of generosity and other good deeds, may I achieve enlightenment for the sake of all beings. Again, in the Buddha, Dharma, and assembly most excellent, I take refuge until I reach enlightenment. By the merit of generosity and other good deeds, may I achieve enlightenment for the sake of all beings. And a third time, in the Buddha, Dharma, and assembly most excellent, I take refuge until I reach enlightenment. By the merit of generosity and other good deeds, may I achieve enlightenment for the sake of all beings. So I'd like to welcome you all here this morning. I'm glad to see people are coming. This is a new format for us, Google Restream. So I can't see anybody this time, like unlike Zoom, where I could see you. But you can hear me, and you can type messages in the chat section. And it looks like we're doing pretty well here internationally. We have Tashi Delic from Denmark and Switzerland. So I'm not sure I'm used to having an international audience, but that's kind of cool. Anyway, hope this all works out well. So anyway, one of the reasons why I want to talk about faith is that over the years when I've been teaching, some of the strange things that we ask tell people to believe in or accept in some way, they find challenging and question some of the things like rebirth or reincarnation. Some of our bodhisattvas with four arms or 1,000 arms. And I just kind of wanted to deal with some of the other questions you have. The essence of the Dharma is much more simple. And those things, you need to pry into them a little bit, investigate them, and see why we have them. One of the words I want to bring in today is upaya. It's a Sanskrit word, also Pali word. It means skillful means. And a lot of these things really are skillful. They really do help us penetrate the meaning of the Dharma, to practice the Dharma, to understand the Dharma. And and so what a lot of these things are upayas, skillful means. But they may not appear that way at first. So we'll talk a little bit about that. Some of the other things that people have troubles with are, you know, just how much to trust the practice. But I think there is so much there, and I've been practicing this for, 25 years now, one form or another. And I have always found benefit. As I said a couple of times along the way, as each time I learn something new, begin a new practice or continue a practice, they haven't lied to me yet. So far, I found everything I've worked with and tried has been beneficial. And to quote the Buddha, he said to some of the people he was talking to, Ihai Pasiko, which is Pali, means come and see. Check it out. But you do have to check it out. So faith is a somewhat loaded word. It's a big word for a lot of people. Some of you have rebelled against a traditional faith, don't want to hear any more about faith, and some of you just don't think much about it. A lot of abstract constructs are sometimes there. But the faith that I want to talk about today is the faith we talk about in Buddhism. In Tibetan, it's dipa, means faith, and Pali word for it is sada. And Pali, by the way, is about as close as we can come to the actual language the Buddha spoke when he was alive. That may not be the language, but it's very close to it. And when we talk about faith, we're talking about developing a kind of confidence based on experience. And to some extent, you kind of have to experience this. Some of the things that you find just don't sit right with you, just kind of leave behind. Kempo Kartha Rinpoche has even said to Lama Kathy a number of times to tell people to take what you can leave, what you can use, and leave the rest. And, some of the practices I've never quite gotten into, the sadhana practices, but I know lots of people find them very valuable. But to me, the basic meditation practices are what works the best, and so that's what I've worked with. So I would just simply invite you to pry a little bit to dig into this. Dictionary definition of faith is something to assent to the mind, the truth of a proposition or statement to which there is not complete evidence or belief in general. And sometimes people will talk about blind faith, and we're not asking for that here. We're asking you to develop faith from a point of view of developing some experience, from trying it out. So it's faith which really is what allows us to take the next step. If you don't have faith, you won't go anywhere further. And we need faith. We use it all the time throughout the day. I mean, we just don't even think about it. For example, I used to appraise real estate. And, you walk into a house, you walk around, you look at the rooms. Well, I was in one house, an old house. It was being foreclosed on, actually, not in the best condition. And I stepped into the bathroom. Fortunately, it was on a crawl space because a few seconds later, that's where I was standing. I somehow stepped in with complete trust that the floor will hold me up, but it didn't. So we just kind of always are trusting on that. You go to see a doctor, you don't know if he's going to help you or not, but you have confidence that just because he's been trained, he's gone to medical school, and has studied a lot of stuff, and there are a lot of people doing research on a lot of the things that he might be working on, that you can have some confidence in him. You have some faith that he may actually be helpful. So we need faith. We need faith to move ahead, to do anything. And I know you've all come to KTC or to this talk this morning looking for something. So you have some confidence. We have at least a little bit of something to offer. I hope that's the case. I hope you find some value in all of this. And in learning the Dharma, one thing I like to point out comes from some of the Tibetan teachers, but I think it's an important thing to bring out whenever we're teaching or studying everything. They call it the problems of the pot, the three problems of the pot. The pot is a metaphor for the student. And one kind of pot is the pot that has a lid on it. Nothing can get in, or it's already full. So everything just spills over the side. The other kind of pot is a pot with a leak in it. You hear all this stuff, you think it's wonderful, but it runs right out, you promptly forget it. But probably the more problematic pot is the dirty pot. The pot is filled that's filled with, you know, your own ideas, your own thoughts, which you bring to it. And so you never quite get the clear Dharma because you're trying to rephrase it in your own way and adding something to it that isn't there. So I think that's an important thing to think about as you're studying some of this stuff, is to be open to it, to have a sufficient faith and confidence to really look at it in an open-minded way. And that's part of what faith does, is open us, or open our hearts and our minds to looking in things that we don't really know for sure and can't know for sure. The next step is working with what they sometimes call the three wisdoms. The first is what you're doing now. At least I hope this is what I'm presenting. And that's hearing. Hearing the Dharma, hearing talks, studying, reading, getting some of the information. And that's where we all begin. The next step is contemplating it, working with it, trying to understand it. And this takes some effort, takes some pushing of the mind into really prying at it a little bit. Does this really make sense? Does this work? And then the next stage is meditating on it, internalizing it, making it your own. So you don't even really have to think about it. You just know it. You have great confidence in it. You have trust in it. You will rely on it. You will work with it. And you will allow it to change you. One of the things that faith requires that you may not think about is a certain amount of courage. You need to face things that you really don't know now, and you must be open to change. Because if the Dharma doesn't change you in some ways, then it's not really doing very much. I mean, you've all come here probably because, as I sometimes think of it, you've run into the First Noble Truth. Something in your life wasn't quite the way you wanted it to be. You're looking for something maybe a little better, some way to deal with the stuff you're having, a way to respond to life. And I think we offer a lot there. So, as we're dealing with the Dharma, we need to dig in and investigate it. We'll talk about that a little bit more a little later. Buddhists love lists. We have lots of them. In fact, somebody once quipped that while Christians love Jesus, Buddhists love lists. And we have a list here, three types of faith. Trust, which we basically feel energized at the very beginning. A more eager faith, a confidence, trust. And then developing faith requires more effort, questioning. And the other part of the talk was a little bit about doubt. And that's part of why we have to work with this, is we have to bring doubt to it. As they say in some of the Zen traditions, great doubt, great awakening, little doubt, little awakening, no doubt, no awakening. If you don't bring doubt to this and work with it and penetrate that doubt to develop real confidence, you're not going to get anywhere. So you will need to work with this a little bit more. So faith comes from something experiential. As you practice, you should begin to notice some change. Notice that you're becoming a little more responsive to the world around you, a little less reactive. And some teachers now are actually talking about, Stephen Batchelor for one, is reframing the Four Noble Truths as the four tasks. The first task, usually we call it the truth of suffering. What he's saying, and I kind of think he really has a good point with this, is that suffering is to be known, to be experienced. That doesn't mean you have to go out and seek it. Basically, what he's saying is embrace life. Be open to life. Look at all the stuff that happened, the good, the bad, the ugly. Embrace it. The second noble truth, usually we talk about craving and hatred and ignorance, but these are all reactions to everything. This is how we react. Anything that happens to us, we usually have some sort, we like it, we want more of it. That's a reaction. We don't like it. We want less of it. We want to push it away. That's reaction. We don't care about it. We just remain sort of ignorant about it, indifferent to it. So the second noble truth, the cause of suffering, really just comes down to simply reactivity. So as we practice and develop more practice, and I've noticed this a great deal in my meditation, becoming much less reactive to situations in my life, much more able to respond. And if you've been to my talks before, I quote this almost every time, the old Chinese Zen master, I think it was Yunnan, who, as he was getting old, his students asked him, "Master, what's the results of a lifetime of practice?" And he said very simply, "An appropriate response." And I think that's what we really are looking for, is how do we respond appropriately, usefully, intelligently to all the things that life throws at us. So I'm going to pause for a minute here and let you know that, you know, if you type questions, I can see them and we'll try to respond to them. I like your questions. I'd kind of like to know where your doubts are, where you're challenged by faith. If anyone has anything to say about that, that would be great to hear from you. I should probably tell you what the Buddha himself actually said about dealing with doubt, dealing with these issues. There's a town, Kesaputa, in India in the Buddha's time. The people who lived there were called the Kalamas. And this town was apparently on sort of a crossroads because a number of teachers came to them and gave teachings. And the teachings were all very different. And each of the teachers would say, "This is the truth. This is the only truth. So you must do it my way." And the Kalamas people were kind of confused. When the Buddha came to town, they heard he was a great sage, very wise. So they thought they'd ask him what to say or how to deal with all of these questions. And these were not his followers, but, you know, he kind of spent most of his life, last 45 years of his life, wandering India teaching. This is what he said. This is quoting from the sutra, the Anguttara Nikaya, part of what's called the Pali Canon, what we have, the words of the Buddha, as best we know. "Don't go by reports, by legends, traditions, by scriptures, by logical conjecture, by inference, by analogy, by agreement, through pondering views, by probability, or by thought. This contemplative is our teacher. When you know for yourself these mental qualities are skillful, these mental qualities are blameless, these mental qualities are praised by the wise, these mental qualities, when adopted and carried out, lead to welfare and happiness, then you should enter and remain in them." Now, I know he said praised by the wise. Sometimes this passage is taken that you're going to believe whatever you want. Anything goes. It's kind of up to me. But he does give you some tests. And accepted by those you really consider wise is one of them. Those would be the sages. He also goes on and gives them some examples of some of the qualities here. He explains that a noble disciple, devoid of covetousness and ill will, undiluted, dwells in this world pervading the bound with boundless loving kindness, compassion, appreciative joy, and equanimity. Thus purified of hate and malice, he enjoys here and now four solaces. If there is an afterlife and karmic result, then he will undergo a pleasant reverse. If there is none, he still lives happily here and now. If evil results befall an evildoer, then no evil will befall him. And if evil results do not befall an evildoer, then he is purified anyway. With this, the Kalamas expressed their appreciation of the Buddha's discourse and go to refuge in the Triple Gem. So he gives these examples. It's kind of like Pascal's wager, if you are familiar with that. Or Pascal said something to the effect, I don't know if there is a God or if there's not. But it doesn't hurt to believe and act as though there is a God. And if there is a God and I act like he isn't, then I might be in trouble. So that are sort of some guidelines on how to deal with doubt and cultivate faith. See a couple of questions here. Cody wants to know how you properly respond to anger. The proper response to anger is to really, you know, try to reframe it a little bit. What's going on with this person? You know, I've done a lot of work with prisons, and a lot of these guys really have a big thing about getting angry, issues with anger. And also the idea of being disrespected, and so they get angry. But just keep in mind that usually people get angry because it's something personal in their life. If you're talking about your own anger, what's the situation that you're in? What are you responding to, really? You know, Shantideva says in the Way of the Bodhisattva, if you can do something about it, then do something about it. If you can't do anything about it, then you can't do anything about it. Either way, what's the point of getting angry? And just kind of take a look at what you're taking in. Why are you angry? Or why is this other person angry? If somebody's angry or seem like they're angry with me, it's usually more about them than me. It's kind of amazing how often we take things personally. And they're really not. And sometimes it feels kind of personal, but if you're open to the experience, just kind of let it happen and realize you have another sentient being in front of you that has their own life, their own suffering, and develop a little bit of compassion and empathy for them. Use some imagination here. Try to put yourself in their situation. Why are they angry? And if you've done something really that made them angry, then maybe you should think about what you're doing, what your behavior is. I know throughout my life, more than once, I've been a real asshole. And probably deserve the anger, but you keep trying to do better. It's a practice. You're not going to get it all at once, but I hope that helps a little bit with your question. Another question here, can doubt become an obstacle to our practice, to our spiritual practice? Yeah, of course it can. In fact, in some of the basic instructions on meditation, one of the challenges that the Buddha even talked about was doubt. That there's restlessness, sloth and torpor, sleepiness, doubt. There's another one in there. Too many lists, and I always get a little lost with lists. So doubt can be. That's why we have to investigate it. Take a look at what this doubt is about. If you just say, well, I doubt it, then you know, you're kind of done for. It's over. There's no point in going on. But if you really look at what's under the doubt, what are you doubting? And is there a upaya there? Is there some skillful means that you're not quite understanding? See if that can help you. Because the Dharma, it's not sort of sometimes when you get a lot of doubt like that, it's sort of like the car doesn't work. You need to look under the hood, see what's going on, see if you can do something about it. So I hope that helps a little bit with doubt. Because doubt is good, it's healthy. But you also have to, you know, work with it, challenge it, and hopefully develop, you know, a stronger faith. We'll never know for certain. On the overall truth of the Dharma, but so far I have found it works very well for me. And I think it can for you. I'll check a few more of my notes here. The other thing I wanted to say is, when the Buddha taught, one of the things, another list, is the five spiritual powers or the five faculties. And faith is the first of them. They've been called five priceless jewels because only when well developed, the mind resists domination by dark forces of greed, hatred, and delusion. When the mind no longer is bound by those energies, then understanding and love have no limits. These five powers are called controlling faculties. When they are strong and balanced, they control the mind and generate power, which leads to liberation. These are faith, which we've been talking about, effort, which I've talked about a little bit, mindfulness, which will emerge as you develop your shamatha practice, basic meditation, concentration is deepening it, and then wisdom is what finally results. Kenpo Kartha Rinpoche in Dharma Pass talks about these. He uses devotion instead of faith, enthusiasm instead of effort, mindfulness, samadhi, which is concentration, meditation, and wisdom. And devotion is another word that is a little bit charged for a lot of people. But I think it's something else to consider, something we need to work with. You know, we talk about being devoted to our teachers. And some people really feel a lot of devotion. But if you really feel devoted, then you lose control. You've surrendered yourself, your agency. But I think it's also how we get through the door. That helps to open up the door. A lot of the practices we do are devotional. And so I think that's a good word that needs to be rehabilitated. You know, we need to look at it and not feel like we're being threatened by it. So I hope that answers with doubt. And yeah, the whole thing of the five faculties is becomes a whole new Dharma talk I'm not prepared to give today, but again, they are there. They are a part of this. So any other questions, comments? I have 10 pages of notes here, and I can't imagine I've actually covered everything I had planned to say, but I guess one of the things to say about faith is that it's not quite the same as hope. When we have faith, we're not necessarily expecting anything. When we have hope, we are hoping something will happen, something will change, or we'll get something, we'll obtain something. And here it's more about what are we going to become? Will we become something? So, try not to confuse those. But as faith grows in us, we develop more confidence in ourselves and in our practice and in the teachings, and we grow and we respond. We become more responsive to life. I think I was talking about Stephen Batchelor's, the four tasks, he likes to call them, embracing life, letting go of reactivity, and when you've let go of reactivity, you've hit the third one, you have sort of seen the end in a way. The cessation of suffering that we know is now possible. And then the fourth one is just simply cultivating the path, cultivating an ethical way of life. And that's the other important part of all of this, is developing an ethical way of life. Somebody wants to know what's given me the most faith and encouragement in my spiritual prayer. I guess I would like to say to that, it's just showing up, listening to the Dharma, practicing, questioning some of the things that I have come in contact lately. I'm realizing now I grew up Catholic. Yeah, some of the things the church gave me, I just simply couldn't accept. But the church I grew up in was, I think, somewhat naive in how they taught young people. And as I was challenging some of the beliefs, I was told basically to shut up and believe. And I couldn't do that. So I kept looking. I spent several years trying to be an atheist. That wasn't really satisfactory. Then I called myself an agnostic. Don't know if there's a God or not. And still, I wanted something more. And when I came to the Dharma, I found something was useful techniques. I learned to meditate. That made a big difference in my life on a daily basis. The more I meditated, the more it worked. The better I felt. And one of my standard jokes when I teach meditation is I began meditating and people became nicer. And somehow I changed the world. But my experience of the world was much better. I'm much more comfortable in it. So it's been one step at a time. It's been a growth over years that has really worked for me. And, you know, I still have doubts. I remain agnostic on rebirth, reincarnation. I don't know. It's been a long time since I've been dead, if I was ever born before. So I simply don't remember. So I don't know if I'm going to come back or not, but you know, I'll take the Buddhist bet. If I practice it, I'll get a good rebirth. Whether it happens or not, I'll have a better life. So that's kind of what's behind some of my faith, what keeps me going. And in the last couple of years, I've been looking a little more at Christianity, since I live in a Christian culture, and I've done chaplaincy work in hospitals and in prisons, where Buddhists make up about 2% of the population, if that many. And I needed to look at what's going on in other people's traditions, what other faiths have to offer. And I find if you understand them in a deep way, you can really find good meaning there. Some of it I'll never be able to go back to, but some of it is very valuable, very worthwhile. I was just telling Lama Kathy about Father Gregory Boyle, who's a Jesuit priest in Los Angeles, who has spent most of his ministry working with the gangs in L.A., starting a business, Homeboy Industries, where they employ the homeboys, the homies, gang members, people just out of prison, people still in gangs looking for a new life. And he really has made a huge difference in so many lives. So, in fact, I just saw YouTube of him and Pema Chodron together, and it was very moving and very, you know, what he does is just kind of amazing. And he has a wonderful sense of humor. So I keep looking, I keep investigating, and I'm finding, you know, looking for the nuggets everywhere. I keep digging deeper into the Dharma, and that will be my path, my main path. But so that's what's given me the most faith and encouragement. So what other doubts or challenges do people bring to the practice? I like more interaction. Someone new to practicing, I find my coworkers and others in my life often laugh or poke fun at my ideas on what I practice. Have you ever dealt with that, and how do you respond? When I first started meditating, I was sort of a closet meditator. That was like 25 years ago. And meditation wasn't nearly as mainstream as it is now. And I know some people would have thought it's kind of weird meditating. So I just simply didn't tell people. I just did it. Worked with it. Jack Kornfield tells the story of one of his students, a young lady, really getting into the Buddhism, came from a pretty Christian family. And she went home, I think, for Thanksgiving holiday. And she was all excited about the Dharma and talking about it. And her family was just giving her a terribly hard time. So she just shut up and kept practicing. Her conclusion was, my family hates me when I'm a Buddhist, but practices me, loves me when I'm a Buddha. So just let the practice work. You know, you don't have to tell people about it. When you get a little more confident with it and more deeper into it, maybe you can try to share. I know I've been a little bit evangelical on everybody should meditate, but that doesn't usually work very well. But just basically being it, a flower attracts the bees. You know, if you become that flower, if you become a Buddha, then people will respond and they might ask you why. You know, and that has happened to me, actually. In the first years of my practice, some people that I saw irregularly, but they noticed, you seem different. You seem happier. So what happened? And, you know, I tell them, you know, I began meditating and practicing, and it's made a big difference. So I think that would be my suggestion, is not necessarily being too public with it, but if they don't understand, then they don't need to understand right now. You just need to keep on doing it and let them see that, you know, you're a happier and better adjusted person. I hope that helps you and find that useful. But yes, I have kind of run into that. I've had people kind of smirk and then some of the crazier things that I've done with this. Like the first nunye I did, where you stay up all night just about and chant and practice and fast. And so it is something of a challenge to be a minority religion in a very Christian world. And but just keep with it. Let the practice show in your life. You don't need to tell them. I hope that helps. Anybody else? So you all have deep, convinced faith now that you will practice diligently. Somebody wants to know how you stay motivated. And that can be a challenge. And I know I have days where I don't want to get on the cushion or practice. And I guess the trick is simply to just do it. You know, I think that Joseph Goldstein talks about, well, two different students. One is a couple in New York who just simply have vowed every day to sit on the cushion. And basically that means that if they get to their cushion and sit on it, they've done their practice, they've met their vow. They may not stay, they may stay, but once you get there, perhaps you'll stay. The other, and this is what I find works for me, is that just simply the meditation works. I feel better, I am better. And the other example that Joseph Goldstein talked about is a psychiatrist in New York that at the time Joseph told the story had been meditating for an hour in the morning and an hour in the evening every day for over 25 years. So this is a man with a busy psychiatric practice in New York City, and he found 2 hours of sitting and meditation of value to him. So I think if you do the practice and you find the you'll find the practice actually works, and that'll support it. But you have to do it. You have to make that effort. You have to get there. And if you do just a little bit every day and begin to notice that you're a little more at ease, you're a little more responsive in some situations, a little less troubled, maybe you'll keep at it. And I've gone through periods where I really didn't practice very much at all, but it was always on my mind. It was always a part of me. And I always at least practiced a little bit of mindfulness. And you can kind of build some practices into your day. One of the things I do, I call it checking in with myself. I'll just kind of scan my body quickly. Just, you can do this even in conversation. And just notice, are there tensions here? If I notice my shoulders are a little tense, I can just soften them and let it go. And some of those kinds of things help. And we all know, like when we're getting angry or troubled, it's just sometimes taking a deep breath helps. So getting to the cushion helps with that. And doing a little bit of meditation off the cushion helps. The key thing is to keep it in mind and to do it regularly, to build it into your day, build it into all of your, build some kind of practice into everything you do. Mindfulness is the big word now, and everybody is practicing mindfulness and talking about mindfulness. So I think that's kind of what you have to do, is just make the commitment, make the decision that you want to do this. You want to see how it works. As I said earlier, Yihai Paseco, come and see. See what it has to offer. And, you know, like going to the doctor who prescribes medicine to you, if you don't go to the pharmacy and pick it up and to take it, it's not going to be very helpful. But those things all work. So, anything else? Any other questions? Arguments? Arguments? Well, then we can wrap it up a little early if there's nothing else. I hope this has been useful. I hope people have gotten something out of it. And I guess just simply considering the topic today, I'd like to end by reciting a Zen chant they recite in the evening, usually at the end of the day. Let me respectfully remind you, life and death are matters of great importance. Time passes quickly and opportunity is lost. So awaken, awaken, awaken. Do not squander your life. So I hope we all develop a little bit more faith. Don't squander our lives. Keep up the practice. And so let's sit for a moment and I'll read a dedication of merit. So let's just sit and dedicate the merit with the aspiration. This comes from Shantideva. May the fearful become fearless. May those oppressed by grief and joy, may those who are anxious be rid of their anxiety and feel secure. May health come to the sick. May they be free from every bondage. May those who are weak find strength, their minds tender towards one another. And thank you all for listening and being here today. I hope you got some value out of this. And we'll see you again. So, thank you.
Thank you for joining us for this week's Dharma Talk. We hope you enjoyed the podcast. If you did, please subscribe, rate, and review it on iTunes. To learn more about the Columbus Karma Teksum Choling or to donate to support our Dharma Talk series, please visit our website at columbusktc.org. The opening and closing music for the podcast is Tibetan Flute Song by Tamding Arts at tamdingarts.com. Please join us again next week for another Dharma Talk.